Okay, so good evening, Branch, and whoever else is listening. Myself and Fred Campbell here at the Driftwood Cottage live in Branch St. Mary's Bay, right next to the Cape Shore, Newfoundland, Labrador. And we're actually hosting this session as a part of Network 16. And what Network 16 is the coming together of community media volunteers, I suppose, across Newfoundland and Labrador, and in this case across the country, because on the line with us we actually have a name by the a man by the name of Barry Rook.
Correct.
Okay, wasn't sure if I was pronouncing your name right. And you're currently talking with us from where in Canada?
I'm in the nation's capital in Ottawa. Our offices are located about 5 minutes away from Parliament, so I can actually look out down the road and see all of the runners that are happening. It's our race day here in town, so there's thousands of people in town to run outside in the nice hot weather.
Oh, nice. Well, the view from this kitchen window here, we can see live offloading of crab at the wharf and Branch.
So just a little different, but with the magic of radio, we're able to talk.
Yeah. So maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about what it is you do. And I believe you're a part of NCRA. Maybe you could tell everybody what that is, what it means, and what it is you do.
Sure. I'm really happy to be talking again. Actually, I was involved with the version of this last year and then a couple of years beforehand. Well, I wasn't with the NCRA. Well, I was with the University of Guelph radio station. But the NCRA is the National Campus and Community Radio Association. I'm the executive director. I moved here to Ottawa about a year ago from southwestern Ontario to take over sort of the role of the organization. And it's been a pretty big ride, actually, for me. I've really enjoyed working with everyone, and everyone is, our association consists of 95 nonprofit radio stations who are set up across the country. We have a handful in Newfoundland and a handful that may be involved or have been involved with this project in the past, Voice of Bond Bay and Bay of Islands Radio, which we're currently in the licensing program working with them to help them get their FM transmission. So I oversee and support a group of 95 radio stations. Each station is set up on their own. They're all nonprofit based and organized, so they have a board of directors that doesn't get paid. They do all the work for the love of radio and the other things that go around with the radio side of things. And then I act as sort of information distribution. I do a lot of capacity work, so acting as a lobbyist, setting up services, helping out with regulatory work, all that kind of self. And there's myself and one other staff member, and at the moment, that's the organization that helps with the 95 stations across the country.
That sounds very interesting. Of those 95 stations, how many of those would be in rural areas?
Yeah, so we have kind of a really neat little split with the whole sector. About one-third of our stations are linked to campuses, so they actually have a campus community license. So they're supported by members and student fees. We've got about one-third of the radio stations are community stations that are situated close to a medium or large-sized city. So we have a group, say, in right downtown Toronto, which is an all-Spanish Latin program, which is the only one in the entire country. And then there's about a third of the stations which are pretty remote and rural stations. A really great example is CJAI, which is Amherst Island, located about 2.5 hours south of here, just about half an hour south of Kingston in Ontario, right on the lake. And they serve, for example, a remote island that is accessible only by ferry and for about 500 people in total. So there is a big swath of different types of broadcasters that we have.
Sounds like a very diverse network of community radio stations. Of those stations, what do you think those board of directors and the volunteers that are involved with those are trying to achieve? Are they like advocating on their community's behalf? Are they targeted towards vulnerable populations? What do you think some of their goals are?
A lot of that falls in line with the license that they have. Some stations do have a CRTC license, others don't. The ones that don't, we bring in board because they have a very similar mind about advocacy and underrepresented voices. But that's what our sector is in general. And it's people that are looking to promote and offer alternative sources of information, especially when it's in a medium to large size city. You're often looking at groups that are very passionate about social justice issues, rights, voices, communities that are underrepresented. And then as you move to some of the smaller areas, and again, I'm not trying to pigeonhole any group into it, but it's often much more about the people that they can reach and listen, because there is no other community through media that is there. It's too small for a TV station. The commercial radio stations won't even attempt to move into that sector because there's not the listenership number. And it's really about the connections people make over the radio. And it reminds me, a lot of these smaller areas remind me of a lot of the First Nations radio stations that happen, which are often unlicensed because they're on sovereign land, but they are very, very much used as a communication tool and a community development tool, not as a, here's the next song by blah, 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 who's on the charts type things. It's very much about talking to people about when the next book fair is, if someone's going to be home for late for dinner, that they're letting other people know. And it's really quite neat.
It sounds really neat. It sounds like those stations are really driving home that sense of belonging to a place and inevitably a pride of place.
We're actually starting to see a shift, I think, in the entire sector itself. We're moving away from the larger organizations that are controlling media. They're amalgamating and cutting jobs around news and local sources. And someone who is on the radio in one spot now maybe hosts five different spots, all pre-recorded, and it's losing that local feel. And campus community licensing is one of the only sectors in broadcasting Canada that's growing. Between 2.5% and 5% per year is still adding. And that's because the communities themselves are realizing that there is a void and a gap. And the volunteers and the programmers and the board of directors are stepping up to try to create an opportunity to fill that need.
Right. That's actually a good lead into my next question. I was going to ask, because we live in such a world where it's just, you know, mass media coming at us in so many different ways, how do you think that's affecting these community radio stations? Do you think it's hampering it, or is it, you know, encouraging it in a way when communication seems to be changing and getting faster and instantaneous every day?
I think you're starting to see more awareness of what people are actually listening to or paying attention to. There is a zombie-like drive towards mainstream and mass media. And once some of those stories that finally break, that really actually change people's perception, they're looking for alternative sources that maybe better align with the information that they want. And it tends to be those community organizations or groups. And the way things are changing nowadays is you're not necessarily as tied to a technology, say an AM or an FM broadcast range. You're seeing a lot of change in organizations online who are podcasting, who are creating online streams, who are doing events like yours where it's a pop-up. Information comes, goes, people learn, and they drive forward with new ideas and opportunities. And it's pulling people away from the mainstream sounds or the mainstream discussions that are just monotonous over and over again. So I feel like it's growing. I feel like there's more interest. I feel like our organization and their sector itself is getting a lot more recognition when it comes from different organizations and groups. And it's now no longer just, that station full of left-wing anarchists who want to destroy the government. It's no longer viewed in that sense by the majority of people that are aware of the sector. It's viewed as an alternative viewpoint and some really neat, unique ideas and sounds that come from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know certainly over this past few days here in the Cape Shore and in Branch and Point Lines, we've certainly seen some really unique perspectives of community organizations come to the forefront through this venue, really, of media that we've essentially created ourselves.
And it happens a lot. And I've always been really fascinated by the work that's happening each year in Newfoundland about how it comes together and the ideas are able to be brought out. And, you know, sometimes it's not sustainable at a full time or, you know, even once or twice a week. But the ability to come together and grow and develop in that sense really brings those communities closer and closer together when there are other forces trying to pull them apart.
Right, I agree completely. I'm not sure if Fred wants to chime in on this conversation, but I certainly think that what Barry is saying certainly aligns with everything that we're doing and aiming to do.
Yes. Definitely.
Yeah.
I saw...
In terms of more attention being paid to this media, I saw... an article in which you participated. It was in this magazine. A friend of mine brought it to me and said, look at this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. And that was a great opportunity to be able to showcase some of our sector from across sort of the board. There was a really great discussion around the Calgary radio station, CJSW, and how they've grown and developed and really become a powerhouse when it comes to a community voice in a large city, which you don't necessarily see that often, even in places like Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver. They're often smaller, well, they're big stations, but they have a smaller listening range because of how many licenses and frequencies are there. But Calgary does a great job. They have a large coverage of the city, and they've really shown that importance of what it means to have community media in a sector. And I was very happy to participate in that discussion that was presented from this magazine.
So along with Newfoundland and Labrador, I know you just mentioned that you know, you're genuinely interested in what's happening in this province with community radio every year, but what's, you know, on the go in other provinces in regards to developing their own community media?
Well, you're seeing in more of the urban areas, you're starting to see a lot more groups that are gravitating towards new media outlets, social media, online podcasts, quick video blogs, that kind of thing, to get their information out. So that continues to grow in the larger areas. A really great topical point is on the other side of the country in BC. And BC is, because of the terrain patterns there, you're left with very isolated, small little towns that maybe don't have the ability to be covered, like I said earlier, about for a commercial radio side of things, but the community pops up. So organizations like Stoke FM and Revel Stoke is one who's in the process of trying to get their license. The Gulf Islands and the Salt Spring Islands, which is just a bit north of Victoria, has a group that's come together. They're in the middle of a Kickstarter fundraising campaign looking to find $40,000-$50,000 in order to get their the regulatory requirements for their broadcast to be licensed in an FM side of things. So there is a growth in BC, and we've seen that with smaller organizations or stations that are serving very isolated towns. But it's extremely important because they're often the only place where information is able to be transmitted, where people can go on the air and talk about local events, sell advertising, and then emergency services, as all FM stations now have to be connected to an emergency services system. It's put together these organizations connected with their local emergency fire and police and severe weather so that they're able to respond and react to inform people, which normally wouldn't have the opportunity to have that information at their hands.
Right. I visited Radio Bell Island a couple of weeks ago, actually. And one of the volunteer leaders, I suppose, with that organization was showing me the little device there that they have in their studio for emergency announcements that would need to get on air, you know, as soon as possible if something were to arise.
Yeah, and that was put across the whole sector this year, mandated in by the CRTC, it's called. And they unfortunately, they did not help with stations to install this software. Or hardware, which could cost up to $5,000. So a radio station that, you know, is fully volunteer, that runs on just a couple grand a year on donations, doesn't necessarily have the cost to bring in this technical thing. So there's been a challenge with that, and a gap at some point a couple years ago when the requirements were put into place, and not as understanding of the network as there could be. But that's part of the reason we're here, and we're continuously meeting and working with organizations and government groups and so on in order to make it more aware, so that those groups are really inspired as much as I am and as much as the radio people are in the community radio that's being developed right at home.
Mm-hmm. I know, Barry, you're involved from a national point of view, but do you have any idea what's happening in regards to other countries around the world using community media?
Yeah, we actually have a chance to meet. I really, really want to say it, but I'm not allowed to because we haven't confirmed the final details. But there's a huge individual coming through the area in a week and a bit, and hopefully we're going to be able to talk to her about her involvement with radio and media around the world. But in general, what it was is you are seeing a growth, especially in places like Thailand and Southeast Asia. Not as much in Africa as it was maybe 5 years ago, but some of these regulatory bodies are now opening up and allowing stations, because the change in the political climate, to actually go out and broadcast at a community level. So I was at a conference talking with one of the FCC, or the individuals who oversee the regulatory telecoms in Mexico. And their response was they have over 500 community radio station applications within the last year to start stations there because of that need for the community side of things. So we're starting to, even though it's maybe a little bit older of a technology, it's a standard technology. It's around the area everywhere, and it's becoming something that continues to grow at an international level.
Right, I'm very glad to hear that, actually, and in listening to you talk about that, you know, I can totally relate from my role here in my community of Branch. I'm an elected town councillor here, and we're always sort of, you know, searching to find ways, well, how do we communicate with the community? How do we host public engagement, essentially? And, you know, I really think that community media, specifically community radio, is an excellent tool for that.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing it with people, again, who now, especially a younger demographic who does not get information through traditional sources like an evening newscast, they're finding it on Twitter, on Facebook, on Snapchat, that type of thing. And the radio stations that a lot of the radio stations I know have really taken up that cause and becoming, again, what's much more local and focused around, because they're there, they're the ones that want to present it, and that community citizen journalism part is really starting to continue to grow, and, you know, and I think that you'll see it, or that you do see it yourself in the communities that you're in.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I mean, along with the communication tool, I mean, I think there are just so many positive advantages of people becoming involved in community media. I mean, not only is it the creating a pride of place, but it's the skills that one adheres to when they become involved in something like this, and the people that they become involved with, and the networking that takes place.
The education around media literacy has grown, and I think that it's been forced to grow because the technology changes so quick. But it is encouraging people to get out and present and talk more. Maybe it's just online at the moment, but at least some of the more important discussions are happening or being brought forward, whereas maybe that information was locked by a large corporation who never had access, and there wasn't someone that would be able to find a medium to talk with. So, yeah, I think it's really quite a neat experience and change in the way things are going.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I'm not sure if Fred has anything else to add to this conversation.
It's been a long week. And next week, yeah, actually is Fogo Island. I don't know if you've ever heard of Fogo Island, but it's an island off the north coast of Newfoundland. But it's part of Newfoundland, I think. There we're going to set up 5 radio stations the whole length of the island, which is, I don't know, maybe 30 miles or something. And they're looking hard at, because they've all amalgamated their seven communities or whatever, and they're looking hard at where they're going to go with economic development, and particularly geotourism. Mm-hmm. And a few of the people brought in the radio because they wanted to make sure that all the people were not only able to be transparent, basically, so that all the people would know what was going on, but also would have a chance to participate. And I think these are, from my, you know, narrow perspective, if you like, this is what really interests me with the potential of local radio, is the possibility to be relevant, really, to people's lives.
Yeah, completely agreed. I was at the what they call the CRTC Discoverability Conference, and their partner in that major one was the National Film Board, and there was a lot of talk about Fogo Islands and the revitalization process that's now turning over again into a newer cycle, and the discussion of where things are going in that aspect, because there's a lot of history that drives back to the area around community development, community media, and the networks that are created by video and radio in that sense. So there's a lot of really good, exciting stuff happening out on the East Coast. So it's great that you're involved and connected with it and you get to experience that process.
Yeah, I've been talking to a couple. A woman on Fogo Island contacted me, and I'll go see her. She's interested in the truth about rural Newfoundland is it's hills, right? It's up and down. Mm-hmm. It's mountains, and which makes it very difficult to do low power radio, right?
Yes.
So she's interested in just sort of setting up in one community, not for the whole island, right? And yeah. So I think that what I'll do is I'll plan on talking to her, but then I'll refer her to you, right?
Yeah,
and
be great.
The other one, which we talked about, I think last year, there's another southern shore. We're in the south, we're actually on the Cape Shore, but it's on the south of Newfoundland. And there's another district called the Southern Shore. And we did a few special events there. It's a place called Fairyland. And they immediately decided that they wanted to go for their own radio station. They formed a committee years ago. And they actually, it's kind of interesting, the guy is kind of a retired musician from Guelph who they chose to lead their committee and interact with CRTC. He worked with, I think we mentioned that before, he worked with the cooperators. And I think you said you worked with the cooperators in that area at one time anyway. But basically what they've done, like he thought it would be a lot easier dealing with CRTC. And he wasn't as persistent, say, as Kelly was on Belle Island or Gary in with VOBB. And they just went at it, right, like a dog with a bone. And he was a bit more laid back about it. And so they've ended up going for internet radio. So they're doing internet radio now. But I think their long-term plan is still to go to end up with a full-time radio station. And you've talked to the people in, and in fact, I think they're an associate member, a member, Bay of Islands Radio out in Corner Brook.
Yeah, we're working with Cody there right now on their license application, and final comments for that close next week. So people could, if they were interested too, they could comment on it from a local level.
You know, that's great. And I was talking, I was with VOBB last weekend. They're doing, they have a 10-day festival that they're participating in. So I was there with them. I was mentioning, we had Anita Best. She started off Network 16 with a interview with Mallory on Thursday, I believe. But I was talking to Gary, who you've communicated with.
Yep.
And again, he totally praised what you did with them in terms of waking them up to their need to relicense and other advice, right? So.
Well, that's what we're here for. And as I sort of mentioned off the top, we're from everybody who's been on the air for 30 years to a group of individuals that have a dream to do something and don't even have a microphone yet. We work with everybody across the sector in order to be able to get them the technology, get them the skills, maybe a bit of funding here and there, and really get them so that they're serving what the rest of that community needs.
Yeah, and last summer we did a, and you know about this anyway, we did a special event with the Con River Mi'kmaq, and it's actually the only reserve in Newfoundland, and they've been waffling a bit on it. They keep having meetings and discussing it and trying to get going. And finally, they were talking about buying equipment, and then it was licensing. And I was on the road, and they were asked me, and I said, well, from my point of view, I think you really you get your equipment later, but like go for the licensing now, like start at it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a process. It takes a year or so from sometimes when you, or even more from by the time you start to fill out the application to the time that you hear from it. So it's a long process, and there's quite a few bumps along the way, and it does help to have an organization like us or partners within the area that have had some experience or are willing to go through those growing pains with you as you move towards fulfilling that community.
Yeah, I think I'll try. I gave them your email address before, but sometimes you're a long way away in some yes. respect, right? And to get yep. people to have the trust and that sort of thing. But there's also a guy, I think he's going to be coming by tomorrow, who was, I think he's originally from the States, but he spends a lot of time with them. And what I may do is actually give him your email address, and then maybe, and he actually meets regularly with them, and maybe he can help introduce you to the process. So they'll kind of like, it's just little hurdles people have to go over, I think, right?
It is completely. And even from our point, I have a board of directors who are 10 volunteers from across the country who oversee the organization. And then I have myself and one coworker, and that's it. And the rest of it is sort of on our own to decide where we go and how we can support. I mean, there's a regulatory committee and various other organizational groups with inside of our own that able to, give the a need and the knowledge to it. But it's just like community radio in general. It's sometimes there's only a couple of really key people that are interested, and it takes a bit of time to get things connected and aware of, and capacity issues are also something that pops up too.
Yeah, it's like step by step. I'm going to hand this back to Mallory and see if she has anything more to add.
No, I've been listening, and I'm incredibly interested, really. Barry, you said something a few minutes ago in talking about people who, it was something along the lines of they need a microphone or they haven't had a microphone put in front of them yet. And, that just struck me as really moving, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, and I think you see it a lot with individuals who have not connected with radio before and don't understand the power, where when they do get a chance to sit down and have an interview with someone like yourself and or talk to someone else about one of their topics that they're an expertise in or have interest in, they suddenly start to realize that there is a power that's available there that allows for expression and decisions and discussions around things that haven't happened before. And you start to really wake up that individual to a lot more that's in the world. And that's where the education point comes back to. So a really good example is we have a member who is the only high school licensed station with a community license. About 7-10 years ago, maybe a little less than that, there was a license for high school stations, and there were hundreds across the country, and they had kind of died out and been taken over as storage rooms and so on, because the radio push sort of had dropped away for a bit. But there's one station, which is called The Cave, located in Kingston, and how it works is that they have a professor who takes a group of 20 students, and from 9 in the morning to 4 at night for one full semester, they learn how to make radio, and they're on the air doing news reporting and gathering and interviews and host their own radio shows and sell advertising, all this kind of stuff. And it's a really neat process to see. And now they have a good sense of if they're interested in radio as a career path, if they like it as a hobby, maybe it's not them for when they move on to post-secondary education or something else in the world. But it's a really neat place to dip your toes in and learn And I think that's what a lot of the power that comes out of community radio is that knowledge of information being passed, what you can and can't do, and what you can achieve as a community.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree 110%. When these events happen, as Fred knows, I'm very much look forward to involving youth in the communities of the Cape Shore. You know, we are pretty rural here, and I think Branch has a population of about 220, 230 maybe, and probably about 30 students from, you know, kindergarten to grade 12. So I think it's really important to involve them. I know my own experience with community radio has been, you know, a little bit, I shouldn't even say little, but it's just been a massive change really, and inspired me to get involved in a bunch of other community activities. So, you know, I can't really stress enough how great it is, I think anyway, that this stuff be in high schools and be open to youth who may not be a part of other extracurricular activities. And I think that becoming involved in community media is, you know, an excellent, excellent opportunity to have as a young person.
I don't think I could say it better myself. Well said.
All right. So on that note, I suppose that about wraps it up, Barry.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk again and learn some more about what's happening out east.
Right. Well, we hope it's a great evening in Ottawa. It's very foggy here in Branch, and we still see crab pots being offloaded very quickly. So we hope all is well in Ottawa, and thank you so much for joining in with us this evening.
Thank you very much for your time and for having me on board.
Thanks.
See you, Barry.
Bye now.